Hey, folks, thanks for tuning back in to the CBSSports.com Eye on College Football podcast. I am Chip Patterson, and we are going to get you set for New Year's Eve and New Year's Day, two days that we get to reclaim. Last year, we lost them because of the NFL, and my guest, Tom Fornelli, we're going to be going through all the expert picks at CBSSports.com. Against the spread, straight up, trying to see who's picking what, why they might be deciding that. Tom, doesn't it feel right again? I remember I was really frustrated last year not having college football on New Year's Day.
Yeah, screw the NFL. I'm happy that we have New Year's Day back to ourselves because these meaningless bowl games mean more than these meaningless Week 17 NFL games with all the playoff spots pretty much already decided. So, yes. New Year's Day belongs to college football. It's back home. It's the best day of the year, and I can't wait for it.
Now, what Tom and I are going to do, we're going to run down all of first the New Year's Eve games and then the New Year's Day games, because we know that particularly as everyone's getting together, everyone likes to have their selections. Everyone likes to tune in. There's going to be football on more than likely if you're gathering in a social setting just sometime during this these 2 days where we ring in 2013. Tom, do you have any notable New Year's Eves? Anything that jumps out as a best or strangest in for you?
Well, for New Year's Eve, a game I'm looking forward to more than any is the Chick-fil-A Bowl, because it makes me think of Chick-fil-A food as I'm watching the game. And it's also a pretty good matchup between LSU and Clemson, between two teams who are ranked in the top 15, and it should be a pretty decent game.
No, do you have any New Year's Eve memories? Are there any New Year's Eves?
Oh, like, well, for you? I'm not sure if I could share those here. But let's just say that most of the memories are hazy at this point.
Right.
And they were excellent.
Well, I'm sure they've aged like a fine wine, so it's only like the best parts of it.
So many of my years started in strange places that I don't know how I got there.
I've done two New Orleans New Year's Eves, and one of them was at the same time as the Georgia-Hawaii Sugar Bowl. I think it was 2007. And everyone talks about, the strange people you see on Bourbon Street, everybody living up the New Orleans lifestyle. And Hawaii fans that had made the trip were partying on Bourbon Street that New Year's Eve. It was awesome to watch.
Yeah, I think when we think, as they would call us mainlanders, when we go to Hawaii, it's great because it's all tropical and it seems like, the vacation spot. But I think for people that live in Hawaii, I would imagine that leaving that place and coming to a city like New Orleans would probably be just the same exact reaction we have getting to Hawaii. It's like your eyes are, the size of quarters and just opening all the lights and everything that's awesome going on. And New Orleans in general, I think that's way for everybody. Because I remember when I was there last year, it was a very good time. New Orleans is always a very good time.
Yeah, that's right. And Tom was there at the Sugar Bowl last year for Michigan and Virginia Tech. We are going to start with the Music City Bowl in Nashville. Got NC State and Vanderbilt. The Wolfpack come in, led by offensive coordinator Dana Bible. Tom O'Brien, sort of one of the first coaches fired as the coaching carousel began to spin. The spread, as we picked it, was Vanderbilt as a 6.5-point favorite. And we went all the way, Tom. We all broke the rule. You see this, right?
Yes.
Yeah, we always say, you don't want to pick one team straight up and then the other team to cover if it's a close spread, particularly less than a touchdown. And Dennis Dodd, Bruce Feldman, Tom, Jerry, Matt Hinton, and myself all picked Vanderbilt to win straight up, but NC State to cover 6.5. Tom, why'd you do it?
A pretty good rule that I've started to follow recently that I ignored during the regular season and bit me in the butt was that when it comes to the ACC versus the SEC, the SEC team is always going to win the game. It's just, I'm not sure that Vanderbilt's a much better team than NC State, whereas that touchdown spread, I think it's going to be a close game. I have to go with NC State to cover, although, you do get a little concerned with the coaching change, and you never really know how teams are going to react when there's an interim coach in charge. It's only one of two ways. They either get super fired up for the game, or they just don't show up and they're flat. But I think NC State's talent is enough to where they're going to be able to keep up with Vanderbilt, because Vanderbilt's offense is not really the kind of offense that you're going to look to blow out anybody in any game. So I think it's going to be a close game, but when it comes to straight up, I got to go with the SEC and these SEC-ACC tilts.
My main reason for picking NC State at the time was, like you said, I think they can always hang around, and a big part of that is Mike Glennon. As he showed in the game earlier this year against Clemson, the final score was 62-48. NC State's defense couldn't stop Taj Boyd and Clemson's offense, but at the same time, Mike Glennon just sat back there and just started slinging it around. You got Quentin Payton, Tobias Palmer, a lot of threats on the outside that have gotten better. Brian Underwood is another one, and they've all gotten better as the season has gone on. So I was thinking to myself, you know, of course they're going to be able to cover this spread because they're going to score late. Then there's going to be a, like an onside kick attempt that'll, you know, either fail or work out. And then Vanderbilt will probably end up winning the game. But man, Vanderbilt's won six straight, and four of those have been by 20-plus points. Rogers, Zach Stacy, and especially wide receiver Jordan Matthews have been grooving, and I'm kind of starting to doubt my pick.
Yeah, well, you know, Vanderbilt has won four straight games by 20-plus points, but the thing is, Vanderbilt was playing Tennessee, Wake Forest, and Kentucky in those games. The one good team they played was Ole Miss, and that was a 27-26 win. So it's like out of their last four games, they played one decent team, and it's a one-point game. So I understand your concern, but I don't really share it. I think it's going to be pretty, if not entertaining, at least interesting in the fourth quarter game.
Yeah, that's all right. That's kind of where I'm at. I think that regardless, that we've got a high watchability on not necessarily all four quarters, but it will spike in the second half.
Yeah, it's a game that even though you might, you know, be bored for the first three quarters, the fourth quarter will make it worth it because it's going to be interesting. It'll be like, you know, the old NBA cliche. You don't need to turn it into the last 5 minutes anyway.
Right, exactly. Moving on to El Paso, we've got Southern California and Georgia Tech. USC, well, you know, already late for a function on Thursday, and now now we're not really sure about Matt Barkley and his status. It would be Max Wittick if he's not there. You would think that USC should have a clear advantage over Georgia Tech, a 6-7 team, just lost 21-15 to Florida State in the ACC championship. But Jerry's going with Georgia Tech plus 10.5, and Dennis, Bruce, Tom, Matt, and myself all taking USC to cover 10.5. What's sort of your read and reasoning here?
Well, I think my reasoning for picking USC is pretty simple. I mean, they haven't had a great year, but by far they're the more talented team. I can't decide whether we're supposed to hate or love Lane Kiffin, because like you said, they showed up late to the function at the Sun Bowl yesterday. Georgia Tech left the dinner before USC got there because they got tired of waiting for them. And you know it's Lane Kiffin's fault because, let's be real, all this stuff keeps happening at USC since Lane Kiffin got there. And, you know, there's one consistent throughout the entire thing, and it's Lane Kiffin. But I can't decide whether we should hate him because of it, because he's being an a-hole, or if I should love him because of it, because he's being an a-hole.
Yeah.
Because so, it's like, it's part of the whole Rebel thing I kind of respect, where he's like, dude, it's the Sun Bowl. I don't care. My players don't want to be here. I don't want to be here. Let's just freaking play the game and get on with the rest of our lives. But at the same time, it's like, hey, it's the Sun Bowl. You know, show up and play the game. It's what you're paid to do. It's what you're supposed to be doing. But as far as the game goes, I mean, I think SC's defense will have a little trouble with Georgia Tech and that triple option attack, but I always worry about option offenses in bowl games because while it's tough to prepare for them on a week's notice, on short notice during the regular season, when you get a month to get ready for the triple option, it's really not all that hard to stop. And as long as USC took its practices seriously, and once again, with their attitude towards this game and Lane Kiffin's attitude towards this game, there's no guarantee of that. But as long as they took their practices seriously leading up to this game, I don't think they'll have much problem with Georgia Tech.
Right. Your concerns are the fact that, you know, in order to play the option well, you need to be disciplined, you need to tackle well, you need to, you know, play assignment football. One problem is tackling well and discipline was not exactly a common thread throughout the year with USC's defense. This is Monty Kiffin's last game, though. He is going to be coaching in this game, and then he will step down as USC's defensive coordinator. So maybe... I guess you could say maybe that he, you know, coaches him up, tries to get the most out of him in his last opportunity on his son's staff.
Well, also, if, you know, you think of Monty Kiffin's defense, you know, the cover two defense. I mean, an option offense like Georgia Tech's is one that the cover two could work pretty well against because you get two safeties over the top. So when Georgia Tech does take those deep shots that they're going to, you know, they'll take a few of them during the game, USC's base defense is prepared to stop that. So they could just load the box and, you know, assign everybody, give everybody their assignments on the option. So I don't think USC's defense will have much trouble, and I do think that Georgia Tech's defense will have a lot of trouble with Marquise Lee and company.
Yes, that is true. Very good points there. All right, we're moving on to the Liberty Bowl. Got Iowa State and Tulsa in a rematch from earlier this season. Tom, you and I were some of the only you picked Tulsa, I picked Tulsa, Dennis picked Tulsa, with Bruce, Jerry, and Matt Hinton taking Iowa State. I'll admit some of my enthusiasm had to do with sort of watching the way Tulsa's ground attack was firing on all cylinders with Singleton, Watts, and Douglas right there in the Conference USA championship game. But it also seems like, you know, this is a big year for Tulsa, their first Conference USA title since 2005. Blankenship, of course, played at Tulsa. I like their momentum. Was your decision more on Tulsa, or was it more about Iowa State?
I was more Tulsa. It's, you know, first of all, they want revenge for losing earlier this year to Iowa State, but also it's always tough to beat one team twice in the same year. So I look at that edge. And then also, I mean, that game that they did lose to Iowa State was a 15-point loss in Ames, but it was the very first game of the year. And as you know, during the first week of the season, things happen that generally don't always indicate how the rest of the year is going to go. And Tulsa since then has improved. Yeah, they lost to SMU, which was a surprising loss, but their only other loss was to Arkansas, which, down year or not, Arkansas has got talent on that team. But they did play well down the stretch. The rushing attack really came together. I mean, I think they're in the top 10 for rushing yards per game. And meanwhile, Iowa State finished 6-6, which, you know, 3-6 in the Big 12 was respectable because, once again, the Big 12 was one of the best conferences in the country. But the Cyclones kind of limped towards the finish line. They beat Baylor and Kansas, and the Baylor win was impressive, but that was before Baylor really seemed to find its stride as well. And the Kansas win, it's, well, Kansas. But in their last seven games, those were the only two they lost. They lost to Kansas State. They lost to Oklahoma State. They lost to Oklahoma. They lost to Texas. And they lost to a West Virginia team that really, in the last week of the year, was one of the West Virginia team that hadn't been playing that well for a few months at that point. So I think Iowa State's definitely got a chance, and I think there's a reason the spread is so small. It's only 1.5, and it's two pretty equally matched teams. But I just think that the way the season finished, the way Tulsa was playing compared to Iowa State, that's what tilted me towards Tulsa in this matchup. But, of course, with the bowl layoffs, it's up for grabs.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. It was more about, you know, the way each of the teams finished. Moving to ATL in the A for LSU and Clemson, Chick-fil-A Bowl, the bowl game that Tom has already said he's most looking forward to because of getting to consume all the Chick-fil-A as part of the ritualistic experience. This is that 7:30 New Year's Eve game, so most certainly this is one that'll be on, and this one that'll be fun to watch as you've got, you know, the contrast of LSU's defense, Clemson's offense. We've got a lot of angles here. Our spread was 4.5 in favor of LSU, those LSU Tigers. Now, I picked Clemson. Everybody else picked LSU. Aside from the spread, Tom, what's your read here? What are you looking forward to seeing, and what's your matchup to watch?
For me, the matchup's going to be LSU's defense versus, you know, Taj Boyd, Sammy Watkins, DeAndre Hopkins, and Andre Ellington. That's when you got that kind of talent on Clemson's offense, which, let's be real, Clemson has a lot of talent on offense versus as much talent as LSU has on defense. That's the matchup that you have to look forward to. But it's just the history has shown, you know, there have been plenty of these matchups between these kind of ACC teams and those kind of SEC teams. Just not too long ago when Clemson played South Carolina to finish the season. It's generally always sways the way of the SEC, which is why I'm taking LSU in this game to win and cover. It's, you know, I feel like less with the time off between the regular season, not having to play in the SEC title game and not really having much to play for, has used these extra practices leading up to the bowl game to come up with some insane plays that we'll likely see, because if there's ever a time to use your trick plays and pull everything out of the bag that's left, it's in the bowl game. So I feel like LSU on offense is actually, you know, because Clemson's defense, we've mentioned the offense and how good it is. Clemson's defense is, let's just say, not nearly as good as its offense. So I think LSU is going to be able to have success moving the ball down the field, running and passing against this Clemson defense. So I think the Tigers are going to win. But either way, like you're saying, this is the New Year's Eve night game. So when you're out at the party striking out with the girls, this will be a great way to get over it just by heading towards the nearest TV and watching this one to finish your night.
One little intangible off-field thing that I was considering, not when I made the pick. We turned these picks in actually way before the bowl game start. But Chad Morris interviewed for a few jobs and was connected to, you know, several respectable BCS jobs during this most recent coaching search. I'm wondering if him coming back to Clemson, I'm wondering if Taj Boyd coming back, I'm wondering if, you know, all of them get together, there's going to be a lot of eyes on all these people. I wonder if they get together and try and pull a couple of moves themselves. Like, you know, you talk about Les putting in a couple new wrinkles. You got to think that Morris would love to be able to take advantage of some of this newfound attention for a lot of people. A lot of people might have been familiar with him from either Tulsa or the ACC or just throughout the Southeast. But to do it against LSU's defense, that would be something. And I don't know if they'll be able to, but I could certainly see him trying to take advantage of that.
Oh, I'm sure Clemson will try something, little, you know, some little trickeration, because with all the talent and athletes they have in offense, this is one of the few times a year where they're facing a defense that has just as much, just as much athleticism on the other side of the ball. So generally in these kinds of games, this is when you want to try something a little different, just because if you go straight at LSU, you're not going to find too much success. But if you try, you know, some little trick plays, little sugar on top, you know, you can find some success.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, so we're taking it right through. We're waking up, and it is 2013, and we've got the TaxSlayer.com Gator Bowl. This was the Ohio State game last year, right?
Yes, the magical 6-6 Ohio State Buckeyes versus the 6-6 Florida Gators.
But this year in the TaxSlayer.com Gator Bowl, we've got Mississippi State and Northwestern. Mississippi State, you've got some questions at quarterback, Tyler Russell, whether or not he's going to be able to play. Ladarius Perkins, running back, kind of falling off a little bit as the season has progressed, while Northwestern has, four guys that can all play five different positions between, you know, Venerick Mark, Kane Coulter, and Simeon?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure Kane Coulter has played every position at some point this season.
And the way we picked it, we had Mississippi State as a 2.5-point favorite. Jerry is the only one to take Mississippi State to cover 2.5. The rest of us have Northwestern. I like this Northwestern team. I thought they were pretty good throughout the season, and Mississippi State losing in the Egg Bowl to Ole Miss did not finish well at all, and we did kind of see that the 6-0 start, a lot of that had to do with the soft schedule. I think Northwestern is a better team in this matchup.
Yeah, I do too, and actually I was surprised. I thought when I was taking Northwestern I was going to be one of the few, just because I thought the initial reaction would see, you know, Big Ten versus SEC, everybody would lead SEC, but you're right. Most of us, except for Jerry, all picked Northwestern to not only cover, but to win this game straight up. And I think that's the right call, because I do feel that Northwestern is the better team in this game. But both teams run a similar kind of offense, but I just feel like Northwestern has more playmakers on offense. But Mississippi State's got the better defense, so, you know, there's a little question of what's going to happen. But I just think that Northwestern can do so much on offense and attack in so many different ways. And also, this bowl game, if you ask me, would have to mean more to Northwestern than it would Mississippi State, because Northwestern is still looking for that bowl win. That's something that it hasn't done.
Right.
So I feel like Pat Fitzgerald is going to have this team. You know, they're preparing for this game. I feel like it would be their Super Bowl. They want to win this game more than anything. Meanwhile, Mississippi State, like you mentioned, had that really hot start, but a lot of it had to do with the schedule. And they really crawled towards the finish line, losing four of their last five, with the only win coming at home against Arkansas. But they got beat up pretty good by Alabama, Texas A&M, LSU, and then to get beat up in the last game of the year against Ole Miss. And when you see a game that's that important to both those schools, and Mississippi State got beat up pretty good, I think that's a good indication that maybe Mississippi State is not very good.
Right.
Either. So I feel like in this game, that's Northwestern has the edge. Northwestern should win, even though they're the underdog. But I think Northwestern's going to win. And it might be one of the only wins the Big Ten gets this bowl season, which, think of the irony there.
And moving from there to a game that will not be an easy win for the Big Ten. We've got Purdue and Oklahoma State in the heart of Dallas Bowl. The Cowboys are a 17.5-point favorite. And while Todd Monken's going to be gone, he takes the head coaching job at Southern Mississippi. Oklahoma State has continued to prove that no matter who is there in that offensive coordinator position, things seem to be working. And at 17.5, Tom, you think that Purdue, even though they don't really have much of an offense, even though they've got the coaching transition, you don't think they can keep it close?
No, I really think the only way that Purdue covers the spread is if Oklahoma State just doesn't show up. If Oklahoma State comes to this game looking to play football and wanting to win, this should be a blowout. I think back, if you look at Purdue this season, especially, you know, don't even – the coaching change aside, with all the change on the coaching staff, with Pope being fired and Hazel coming in, I'd say the team most similar to Oklahoma State that the Boilermakers played this season was Penn State, just in that Penn State was, you know, throwing four and five receivers out there and throwing all day, like what's Oklahoma State's going to do. And Penn State beat them 34-9 in a game that didn't even really seem that close. I just don't think defensively Purdue has the players to match up very well with Oklahoma State's offense. They have two very good defensive tackles in the middle of that defensive line, but that's not really, you know, unless they get tons of pressure on Oklahoma State, it's just, I don't see it happening. I don't see Purdue having anywhere near enough on offense. Even against this Oklahoma State defense, it's not exactly tough, but it's just, I don't see Purdue having enough to really make a game of this unless Oklahoma State just doesn't care.
Yeah, and I'm kind of thinking that's what I'm banking on, at least with my pick. Purdue's defense, I mean, you got Kawan Short, you've got a pretty good Purdue defense there, but the problem is, you know, they're just going to be, I think that they're going to be on the field a lot because of the ineffectiveness of Purdue's offense.
Yeah, they have good players on defense, but they just don't match up very well at all with what Oklahoma State wants to do. They don't really have the secondary to limit that. So unless Kawan Short and company just get tons of pressure, make life hell for Lunt and Shelf, it could be a very long day for Purdue.
Moving on to South Carolina and Michigan in the, what's the name of this one again? It's not Capital One.
Outback Bowl.
Outback, yeah. Capital One is Georgia, Nebraska. I didn't have my notes in front of me. And the way we picked it, South Carolina is a 5.5-point favorite over the Wolverines. You're the only one of the CBSSports.com experts to take Michigan to cover in this game. And I'll go ahead and hand it over to you. So break it down and tell me what makes you believe that Brady Hoke and Big Blue will hold their own.
I've actually got Michigan winning straight up too. I made this pick as kind of just a gut feeling. I feel like South Carolina is good, but their offense somewhat, you know, didn't really play all that great down the stretch. I don't think anyway with Connor Shaw, he's a good quarterback, but I think that the offense that South Carolina runs, especially now that they don't have Lattimore, where it's focused on Shaw, I think it fits well into what Michigan does on defense, because Michigan has a very good defense, and I don't think South Carolina is just the type of offense that can exploit Michigan's weaknesses on defense. Meanwhile, on the other side of the ball, where I definitely give South Carolina's defense, particularly Clowney and that defensive line, the edge over Michigan. I think Michigan's offensive line is good enough and strong enough to where it can at least neutralize that defensive line some of the time. You're never going to stop Clowney for a full game or that line for a full game, but I think Michigan's offensive line is good enough to just lessen their impact on it. And I really think Michigan's offense has been a lot better with Devin Gardner at quarterback. And I feel like with the extra time to prepare with Gardner quarterback and Denard Robinson getting healthy and Denard Robinson trying a whole lot of new roles in offense, you know, lining up as a running back, lining up as a wide receiver, because let's also keep in mind Robinson's graduating and he's not looked at as a quarterback of the NFL. So Brady Hoke could do Robinson a favor by lining him up at wide receiver and running back so NFL scouts can actually see him in these positions that they're projecting him at. So I think they're going to have some unique packages drawn up that South Carolina hasn't been able to see on tape because they haven't existed, and South Carolina will have a harder time preparing itself for. So I think it's going to be a close game, and I think it's going to be a very good game, and I think Michigan's going to pull it out.
Okay. All right. All right. What about as we take it to the actual Capital One Bowl, Georgia and Nebraska? Georgia, a 10.5-point favorite after that heartbreaking 32-28 loss to Alabama in the SEC championship game. You go from, you know, what that touchdown, that batted pass, what would be a touchdown possibly. You know, from there, all of a sudden, you're in the Capital One Bowl. Nebraska, of course, getting trounced in the Big Ten Championship. You saw that with your own eyes. Is that one of the reasons why you're picking Georgia, just as they sort of exact some revenge on their next opponent?
Yeah, it's just, I mean, I remember sitting in the press box for the Big Ten title game, and I was watching Georgia and Alabama play the SEC title game on CBSSports.com, our live stream. I was watching it.
That's
on
a plug.
My laptop. Yeah, exactly. And I, you know, just this fantastic, just we all know how amazing that game was. And that was immediately followed by Nebraska getting just, you could say run over, but I don't think that really describes how badly Wisconsin just ran them over and over and over and over. So when I think, you know, of Marshall and Gurley and that Georgia offense and that offensive line and how they were able to move the ball on Alabama's defense, and the last I saw of Nebraska's defense, I just have to think that Georgia, Aaron Murray might not have to do anything but turn around and hand off all day. He might not have to throw more than 10 passes, and Georgia can win this game by, you know, 20-something points. It's just, I don't see, from what I saw of that Nebraska defense, and Georgia, you know, saw it, unless, like we said, you know, the ultimate qualifier, unless Georgia just doesn't show up because it doesn't care, I don't see Nebraska having much of a chance, if any, in this matchup.
Yeah, no, this is going to be like that Alabama-Michigan State game from a couple years ago that is just over early and doesn't stop. That was when the beat 'em down came back during that game. All right, now we've got the Rose Bowl game, the granddaddy of them all, Wisconsin, the team that we just talked about that just put the beat down on Nebraska, and Stanford, which took care of UCLA 2 weeks in a row, the second time, thanks to a missed field goal. David Shaw obviously proving once again this Cardinal team really, really, really good. You don't necessarily need Harbaugh. You don't necessarily need luck. The program is just kind of rolling, and they come in as a 6.5-point favorite. On paper, if you just looked at the records, you would be shocked maybe to see that. But if you look at how Wisconsin was playing near the end of the season, I think that changes it. What was your read here, and why did you decide to pick Stanford to cover?
Well, if you look at both teams from a motivation standpoint, I don't think there's any either of these teams have less motivation than the other, because for Stanford, obviously, winning a Rose Bowl after winning the Pac-12 is just huge for the program. And Wisconsin, this is the third year in a row, but they haven't won it yet. So I think Wisconsin just has much motivation to get the Rose Bowl monkey off its back. It's just, my pick came down to Stanford is the much better team. But like you're saying, that spread did seem a little off when you compare what these two teams did during the season. But I think the spread is smaller just based on the fact that these are two very similar teams, you know, with the two tight end sets running the ball and very good defenses. But Stanford, I think, has played much better than Wisconsin down the stretch, and Stanford has done it against good teams. Because if you look, Stanford's last four wins have all come against ranked opponents, twice against UCLA, once against Oregon, once against Oregon State. And meanwhile, Wisconsin, they've only won two of their last five games, and those two wins came against an Indiana team, which, you know, Big Ten title hopes that we may have had for them in early November just never really came to fruition.
Right.
And a Nebraska team that just laid an egg in that Big Ten title game. But meanwhile, they lost, all in overtime, mind you, but they lost to Michigan State, Ohio State, and Penn State. And Ohio State is the only team of those three that I would even put near Stanford's level at this point. So I just don't think, I mean, with Bielema leaving and Barry Alvarez coming back to coach is a cool story, but the truth is, it's story or not, he still hasn't coached in 8 years.
Right.
So even if it's just a figurehead, he's the one that's going to be making the, you know, decisions on game day. You know, it's kind of hard just to jump back in after that long and be, all right, I got it, you know. So I think Stanford is just the better team. I think there's just more continuity on that side, and I think they're just better at doing what they do than Wisconsin has been at doing what Wisconsin does this year. And because of that, I can't go any other way except for Stanford.
And we wrap up the day in South Beach for the Orange Bowl. It is going to be Northern Illinois in some shiny new Adidas uniforms going up against Florida State. The ACC champs are 13.5-point favorites the way we picked them. I don't know if you saw this, but Jordan Lynch has been spitting some fire in some of the media availability. Seems to be
wear him down.
Yeah, he seems to be unafraid of Florida State's top-ranked defense. And Northern Illinois, you know, they will be without Dave Doran. But Rod Carey was promoted not as an interim head coach. They are operating with their new full-time head coach. That should help things out a little bit as far as the transition goes. Florida State looking for their first BCS bowl win since winning the national championship back in 1999. The ACC looking for their third BCS bowl win. So I look at this. I picked Northern Illinois to cover, Florida State to win. I think about a couple times during the season where Florida State had a talent advantage, but there was something quirky or a single player. I think Jordan Lynch can cause some headaches for that defense, maybe in the first half. But I bet, you know, I think there's too much speed all over Florida State's defense for Jordan Lynch to maybe do some of the incredible long runs and plays that he got in the MAC. But what's your pick? You've got Florida State covering here, right?
Yeah, I've carried the MAC flag pretty, you know, high for all season, especially Northern Illinois' flag. I've been big supporters of Northern Illinois all season, and I want to pick Northern Illinois in this game. I just can't. It's, you know, Jordan Lynch is saying, like you said, he's mentioned about how they're going to wear down Florida State and they'll bring them to their knees. And if you cut them, do they not bleed, et cetera, et cetera. But I think it's pretty much going to be the opposite. I think Northern Illinois is going to be able to hang with Florida State for a half. And it's going to be a close game and everybody's going to be at home like, oh, you know, they might do this. They might pull this off. But Northern Illinois' offensive line, as good as it's been for the Huskies this year, has not faced a defensive line close to what Florida State has. Like, nothing even near that level of talent and size and strength and speed. And I feel like in the second half, it's going to be that Florida State defensive line that wears down Northern Illinois' offensive line. It pretty much puts the clamps down on the Huskies' offense. And then on the other side of the ball, I feel like that's when Florida State's just going to be able to start running over Northern Illinois' defense, which has been good, but at the same time has not faced an offense with the kind of size, speed, and strength that Florida State has. So I feel like it'll be close for half. The second half is when it's going to start getting pretty ugly, though, and I think Florida State's going to pull away and probably win this one by a score of like 31-14-ish. But so, yeah, it'll be a close cover as far as the spread's concerned, but I don't think it's going to be all that close of a game by the time it ends.
Right. I think back to, as loyal listeners of the Ion College Football Podcast will note, for a note from Matt Sussman from the Hustle Belt, the Mac SB Nation blog, the fact that Northern Illinois' offensive line isn't even the best offensive line in the conference. And
exactly.
If they're not even the best offensive line in the MAC, how are they going to do against one of the, you know, two or three best defensive lines in the country?
Yeah, I think just the adrenaline of being in that game will keep Northern Illinois in it for a half. But then, yeah, like I said, reality is just going to set it at that point. Florida State's just going to overpower them.
That's right. So In summary, you can get all of the Against the Spread picks at cbssports.com/collegefootball, and you can go to the picks right there on the tab to the right. You can get them from Dennis Dodd, Bruce Feldman, Tom Frinelli, Jerry Hinnon, Matt Hinton, and myself, Chip Patterson. And you can also get all of the Iowa College Football podcasts by going to iTunes. Subscribe, and we'll send you a note as soon as a new one is posted. And be sure to review, rate, let us know what you think about it. You can hit up Tom on Twitter at Tom Frinelli, and I am at CNPatterson3. For Tom Frinelli, I'm Chip Patterson. Have a happy new year and enjoy the games.